Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Homan Pretorius. Well, let's get into the big news story today, and there is only one, and that is what happened over the weekend with the DA's ultimatum to the ANC. So last week, President Ramaphosa fired a DA member of the cabinet, the Deputy Minister of Trade, Industry and Competition, Andrew Whitfield. And the DA said that the reason was not a good one, that the president was basically firing him for some other reason than the stated one, and that they were issuing an ultimatum to President Ramaphosa that he needed to fire a couple of corrupt ministers from cabinet or else there were going to be consequences. Well, what were those consequences? They were announced in a press briefing when the ultimatum expired without much response except a rebuke from the presidency. And I must say that while watching it live, I thought, oh, wow, this is pretty exciting. I wonder what it's going to be. Is the DA going to leave the GNU? And I think on first glance, it was quite disappointing. Steenhuisen announced in his speech that the DA would be withdrawing from the national dialogue. And I thought, that seems like the most underwhelming thing I've ever heard in my life. But that he was followed that up by saying that the DA would also not support the departmental budgets of any minister that the DA believes to be involved in corruption. Basically, the DA threw down the gauntlet and seemed to be, if not saying they're going to leave the GNU, really pushing the ANC to push them out. And on reflection, the more I thought about this, the more I thought, actually, you know what, that saying that you're going to leave the national dialogue was not aimed at the public, in my opinion. It was a strategy aimed at the ANC. While I think most South Africans, or at least people who watch the show, and I imagine most South Africans, or a lot of South Africans, don't think that the national dialogue is really going to be much, I do think that what happened, or that it's very important to the ANC, particularly to Cyril Ramaphosa. I think that the ANC thinks this is some sort of great workshop which is going to improve its image or give it credibility to enact its program or something along those lines. And by the DA attacking it and saying that it was rubbish and they weren't prepared to be engaged in that sort of thing, immediately that began a process of wounding the ANC's ego. And, well, what have we seen since this announcement? Steenhuisen has been threatened with sanction by President Cyril Ramaphosa for refusing to participate in the dialogue's interministerial committee. Then there were also comments by ANC Secretary General Fikile Mbalula threatening a motion of threatening the DA if it had moved forward with a motion of no confidence in Cyril Ramaphosa, which was one of the things that the DA sort of threatened. They said, we haven't lost confidence in the president, but we're losing confidence in the president. So, Herman, a lot on plate here. What exactly is going on here?
So, I felt the same. As I was watching this announcement, I thought it might land with a bit of a thud, because I've been following the situation very carefully, speaking to people in cabinet. And on Friday afternoon into Friday evening, the momentum for the DA announcing its departure on Saturday afternoon, 3 o'clock, when the ultimatum ran out, the momentum for that was overwhelming. Everyone I spoke to, high up in the DA, high up in cabinet as well, just said, you know, this is it. We up to this point no further. Then on Friday evening, a radio silence hit. And when there's a radio silence from several sources in politics, you always know that something is brewing. When people aren't talking, that usually give you an idea of what's going on. It is quite ominous. But the ominous you know, sound could or silence could have gone either way. It was either something very big, or it was sort of a doubt in the momentum towards an exit. And such was the expectation that the DA would be announcing, you know, Dexit, essentially, that Ramaphosa cancelled a trip to Spain to my mind, be able to deal with the political fallout in terms of a domestic presence. You know, he wasn't absent overseas, aloof when his government fell. He was here to manage the situation, likely to get an immediate deal on the table, get alternative votes. The ANC have proven with the budget that they can get votes from outside the GNU to form something resembling a majority in parliament. And then Saturday morning, I heard they're not leaving. And part of the reason is that the DA felt the argument hadn't been made properly. What we must understand is that the GNU, for all the criticism one could justly aim at it, is a broadly popular political constellation. DA voters appreciate it because, or a majority of DA voters appreciate it because it keeps out of power the EFF and MK, and a whole chunk of ANC voters like it because there's the possibility that the DA might save the ANC from itself, that it might return to some better form of the ANC. And across the board, one generally sees approval for this GNU. It had a majority approval, but now it's, you know, just below 50% the last time we polled earlier this year. But the fact is, it's still popular. If the DA leaves this popular constellation of political parties, with the public not really understanding why, there's a very likelihood that the public will just punish the DA for ruining what the public considered to be a decent thing. And deputy ministers aren't loved, as one deputy minister said to me. The problem is that the public generally don't understand why there's something like deputy ministers. It's not they're not well-known political players. And as competent or incompetent, as well-known or unknown as Andrew Whitfield might be, it's very unlikely that South Africans would have understood and been convinced by the DA's case purely on we lost a deputy ministerial position. Now, you might make it bigger.
Right, and the ANC immediately responded by saying, well, he broke the rules. How can he expect to be in cabinet if he broke the rules? Which is quite, if people are particularly not paying attention to the fine details, it seems like a reasonable argument. There have been deputy ministers fired for the same thing Whitfield is accused of. Now, whether Whitfield is guilty of the thing he is accused of is another matter, but one that can sail over the public's head.
And there's reasonable doubt. It wouldn't have been a clear win for the DA, and the pitch hadn't been rolled. It would have gone down quite unexpected, quite sudden, because most people, we have to acknowledge, have better things to focus on in their lives than the political comings and goings of the GNU parties. So it became clear that the DA's case for exit was weak. That is part of why we came to this ultimatum of making it about corruption, an issue that the public understands, because the ANC has ignored or abused the statement of intent to the founding document of the GNU. That's objectively true, but the problem is that doesn't really have cut through. A violation of contract won't really be a sufficient reason for the DA to leave a relatively popular government, at least in the perception of the ordinary voter. So that's why there was a pivot to the corruption point. And then when it became very clear very early on that the ultimatum wouldn't be responded to as it was expected not to be responded to, I don't think anyone in the DA harbored genuine expectations that there would be steps. But it became clear by around lunchtime that the case wasn't ready. The case wasn't ready for the DA to leave. If the DA were to leave now, it would be a shock to ordinary voters who aren't tuned into the political comings and goings. It won't have the cut through of the VAT debate. It won't be as easily understood as the VAT debate that pushed the DA into such a strong position, according to our polling. And then the message started filtering through. They're not leaving. But the vibe that I'm picking up is very much that it is now a question of when the DA leadership wants to leave the GNU and not if. And this is a complex issue, folks. A lot of people in our liberal sort of wing of the commentariat and the politicos have relatively simplistic answers to, yes, let the DA leave, fight from the opposition benches, and that might be a justified case. But it unfortunately isn't as straightforward as that. A political party, unlike a think tank, isn't just an ideological vehicle. It is also a popular vehicle. It needs to take the public along in a far more complex and emotive way than something like a think tank has to. So if the DA sticks to ideological purity in its exit and really makes a clear political case for its exit, but that case is repudiated by the public, then the DA would have committed an act of self-sabotage of extreme proportions. So now the real question is, can the DA convince the public to be as disenchanted with the GNU, with Cyril Ramaphosa, as they themselves have become? And you make a very important point about the national dialogue. What I'm hearing from sources is that Ramaphosa is absolutely fuming. He really, as much as we might believe that the national dialogue is a nonsense.
Can I just say that the fact that the president gets so incensed about someone ruining his national dialogue is an indication of why I think the president does not have his head on the correct way for dealing with the country's problems. I mean, this is not a priority, quite frankly.
No. But it features so large in the mind of Ramaphosa. One cabinet member said to me he's absolutely obsessed with a national dialogue. He sees it as his legacy project, as the definition of the second term of his presidency. So whilst I think the public ridiculed this idea, you're refusing to participate in something we don't care, okay, you know, staticky for yo. But the fact is, as you say, that wasn't a message aimed primarily at the public. That was a message aimed at Ramaphosa. That's why we are seeing the presidency respond so vigorously and saying, you know, there will be consequences for Mr. Steenhuisen for refusing to serve on the interministerial panel. And it comes back to what Helen Ziller posted on X, and that seems to be the dominating attitude within the DA. It is a question of when, not if, the DA leaves. But they want to be pushed. They don't want to jump. They don't want to own the end of their participation in the GNU. They need it to be an action from the ANC so that the political blame doesn't fall on them as being the petty party that flounced out. And we can go on about this for hours and hours. There's some real questions. I myself am not 100% certain whether I'm pro-GNU or anti-GNU anymore. There are really some questions about how to get to a free and fair election in 2029. What would be the best way to get to that? As we said in the pre-show chat, you know, economies can recover, democracies rarely do. So it's possibly the most complex political quagmire, I think, of the new South Africa, possibly longer. There are no good options. And it really is going to be a question of, can the DA win a messaging war over the next few months to get the public to see the GNU and the DA in the GNU as something that is in the DA's control, because they rather ironically have become the victim of their own successful messaging. Their voters want the DA to be in the GNU because the threat of an EFF-MK alternative is genuinely frightening to a lot of people. So, you know, no right. Easy answers, but certainly the most intriguing political moment that I can remember.
Yes, the formulation that the DA used was a doomsday coalition. And now it is, you know, this is the exact trap. Is it's like, well, we're going to let the doomsday coalition happen because the ANC is not honoring the GNU. Well, you know, doomsday yes. is quite a high bar to get over. So, yeah, that's going to be a bit of a difficult one to message one's way out of. But I think the line I took on Friday last week was that the DA had set a bit of a trap for Ramaphosa here by saying he needs to fire corrupt ministers, which was a very, I think, clever tactical move rather than just saying, oh, this is outrageous, you violated the intent of the statement, whatever, because at the end of the day, as it turns out, no one really cares that much about the statement of intent, least of all the ANC. So, yeah, no, it does look indeed like that trap has been set. If we were to use the metaphor of a very nasty, messy, brutal divorce, they haven't served the divorce papers or anything like that, but they have now met with the divorce lawyer and are beginning to put labels on all the things they're hoping to get out of the house when the thing finally goes through. Would you say that's accurate?
Yes, I think it's accurate, but it's such a complex situation because in a marriage or in a relationship, you don't have to please a bunch of observers in terms of whether you're in the relationship or outside of it. And if we look at DA's
position... That's not entirely true. You have to win over family, that sort of thing. Sorry, I'm really pushing my metaphor here.
Yes. But the thing is, if we look at the moment of most significant political strength that the DA has shown in the last year, it was when they were in the GNU against the ANC. In the GNU, fighting the ANC. That was the VAT moment. Pushed their support up to 30% for the first time in IRR polling higher than the ANC. If that is the basis of the sweet spot for the DA's political power and the DA's political hopes and electoral hopes of being in the GNU whilst fighting the ANC, then the corruption message is a strong one and the trap is a strong one. But the trap does not necessarily lead to a DA exit because the public might fall in love with that very idea of having the DA be the corruption watchdog within the government of national unity, taking from Ramaphosa the idea of being in the government and the leader of the opposition, as Ramaphosa so long was. He's both president and leader of the opposition in the sense that he's the good guy with the office, but he's also fighting the RET forces. So the DA is in an impossible, damned if you do, damned if you don't situation. They will please no one by any course of action they take. And it's now just really a question as to whether the next step and the next few months ultimately end up as a positive dividend for the DA's GNU investment, or whether they lose political capital and, you know, leave the GNU weaker than they were when they entered it. But I don't know. I genuinely don't know. It's the number of variables here is astonishing.
Yeah, so, I mean, you and I have been on a bit of a journey with our views to the GNU. We were both very anti-GNU when it was being negotiated. I mean, we made that quite publicly clear on this very podcast. And I think both of us have softened it. I became much more in favor of the GNU when the DA managed to, as you sort of say, and I think this VAT debate was the best example of this, is the DA managed to basically stay the opposition, but within the government. The phrase I'm very fond of is, I'm not locked in here with you, you're locked in here with me, which seemed to be the approach that they were taking towards the ANC. They were like an annoying, you know, rodent inside a wetsuit or something, like gnawing at the ANC. The ANC wasn't quite ready to get rid of them, able to get rid of them. And that is a nice position. Now that they've sort of found their groove in that one a bit, I think that that's a fairly strong position to keep. But at the same time, the ANC does now have a sort of precedent for, you know, the ANC is certainly going to respond to the DA's provocations with yet more provocations of their own. Yep. They're going to find some other way to mess around DA priorities. They're going to fire another deputy minister. They'll fire another deputy. Yeah, exactly. They'll fire Steenhuisen. They'll get Parliament to censure DA. They'll drum up a scandal in one of the departments, and they'll claim one of the DA ministers is racist. They'll do something like that, right? So the DA does risk, if they stay, being sort of salami sliced away, where, you know, just little bit by little bit they are diminished to the point of complete impotence. And then they'll have their more hardcore supporters who say, you didn't represent us, you signed up with the ANC, this is useless. And then they'll have their more soft supporters saying, well, you didn't get anything done. Which is also not a great position to be in. So, I kind of see both sides of this, of where they should go next.
Agreed. And perhaps to sort of end on this note from my side, is the not only the DA not only has to act as a unit in relation to the public, the ANC, the government, the DA also has to act in relation to itself. And in response to the announcement of Steenhuisen, I have never seen that level of internal anger over a decision taken. The really intense criticism from within the party. So if the DA decides on a strategy going forward, is it in the GNU? Is it out of the GNU? Is it working its way out? Is it occupying that rodent space that you mentioned? That's one thing. That's one level of problem solving. The next level is, can this leadership of this FedEx with Steenhuisen and Zilla at the leadership, can they bring the party along with them? Because this is a down ballot effect as well, where people are worried, are tired, are frustrated. So
and they have to go into a local government election not too far from now, which means they need people motivated, focused, ready to go.
Yes. Yes, and if the DA betrays the idea that it went into government to stop a doomsday pact, that argument hasn't changed. MK hasn't gone away. It's got stronger. Yeah. EFF has gotten significantly weaker, but between the two of them, they're still sort of 20-ish percent. So that argument remains relevant. But also the question of, if they go against that promise of keeping out the EFF-MK, there's a real risk that the voters who voted for them for that very purpose just stay home on election day 2026, 2027, undermining their electoral hopes. At the same time, if they stay in, they've got a much more complex campaign, because then you have to answer for a government you're not in control of while trying to fight for governments that you want to get away from the ANC. So, I mean, it's turtles all the way down. It's between a rock and a hard place. There's no easy answer here.
You know, I think what would be very helpful to the DA would be if they can come up with a message for what they would do in the event of a doomsday scenario, so to speak. How does the country look? How does the DA and some of the other opposition parties that they would hope to maybe bring along with them respond to an ANC-EFF coalition or an ANC-MK coalition? I mean, we also have the possibility that ANC will try to govern with this, like, ridiculously slim majority where, you know, like, they replace the DA with Action SA, and then they have, like, you know, one, a majority of one or whatever. Yeah, and which would certainly be fun, because that would be very dysfunctional, and it would have as many crises, if not more, than the current GNU. Very interesting crossroads we are at, but South African politics since 2024 truly is a different landscape, and I'm very interested to see what happens next.
And part of that, if you want to know how it is a different landscape, shameless product placement, that is why I wrote a book, Rule Breakers, How the 2024 Election Campaign Changed South Africa Forever. It came out last week, and it really just illustrates again that the 24 election was a rule-breaking one. The idea of what counts as a winning message, the idea of what counts as government, the idea of what counts as loyalty, alliances, pacts, relationship between voters and leaders, all of that changed because the fundamental assumption of politics has now changed. Power isn't something you win anymore in a unitary fashion. It is something you carve out from a political mess time again, 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 almost on a permanent basis.
Yes, yes. And we will be shilling that book more comprehensively on Thursday. There'll be an episode out about that where Herman and I are going to be talking about what exactly is in the book and some more details about why perhaps you should go out and buy it. But that's for another day. For now, thank you very much for watching. We hope you found this show interesting. We hope we provided some insight into just what exactly is going on and maybe where it might be headed next. And we will see you once again on the Daily Friend Show. Cheers, everyone. That's a wrap. The Daily Friend Show and the Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.